Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the latest edition of the First Down Snapcast. Tonight I'm joined by regular panellists Ian Davis, Stuart Orson, and Charles Clawson. Now we'll now hand over to Charles, who will introduce tonight's special guest, and we will get the show started.
Hi. Can I just say before I introduce Nicky that that's the best intro that you've managed yet?
Yes.
And you've just introduced the guest, though.
Yeah, and we're in the presence of football royalty, so we're all being really sensible at the moment.
Yeah.
Oh, stop it. Football royalty.
Anyway, so tonight we're pleased to welcome Nicky Horn onto the show. Certainly for me, back in the early 80s, he was one of the a big voice of American football on Channel 4, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit. And when I was looking for a few things about him, I noticed that he's on a radio station called Boom Radio now, and he's described as the discerning Nicky Horn. So we're about to find out whether we agree with that or not.
Okay. I wrote those words myself, actually. No, I didn't.
Well, yeah. So anyway, so I mean, I'm the oldest one here, and I remember when Channel 4 first kicked off with American football, and obviously Nicky, you were the host. To kick the ball, get the ball rolling. I just wonder how you got the job as the presenter of American football when. I know your background as a journalist, but I think most people know.
Actually, my background really is not as a journalist. My background is as an interviewer, really for BBC Radio 1 and British Forces. That's really how I started, as an interviewer. And then I wanted to be a DJ. So when Capital Radio started in London in 1973, I got the gig to do a program called Your Mother Wouldn't Like It, which was a rock show, and basically they just let me play whatever I wanted, and I was very into American rock music. You know, I'd been to America a few times, I'd actually seen American football and been to a few games, but I played a lot of American music, and I was the only one at that time on the air playing that amount of American music. And I got a phone call about 9 months before Channel 4 went on air, a guy called Derek Brandon. And he said, I just formed this new company called Cheerleader Productions. We are going for the rights to broadcast the NFL on Channel 4 when it starts. Can I come and see you? So he came to the studio. He said, I love what you do with American music. He said, so, you know, I really think you could be great for this program. So he came and we had a chat at Capital, and he said to me, so we've got the commission now. He said, we're going to be on the air in about 3 months. He said, what do you know about American football? And I said, I've been to America a few times. I think it is the most amazing game. Said, you know, it looks like nothing else in the world. He said, but what do you know about it? And I said, well, I know it's, and this is where I started kind of bullshitting a bit. I said, I know it's territorial. I know it's a bit like rugby. I said, I know that the quarterback is like the leader of the gang. And he said, but what do you know about it? And I went, well, that's about it. He said, okay, you're hired. And Derek's idea was very, very simple, but it was brilliant. He wanted me to learn at the same pace as the viewer. So if there was something I didn't understand, then I would talk to Miles Aitken, my co-host, who was, you know, twice as tall as me and three times as wide, who actually, Miles was a basketball player. He wasn't an NFL player. So the idea was that if I didn't understand something, I would ask Miles, but I would learn at the same pace as the viewer. So I remember we were about 4 weeks away from the first transmission, and I was in the Cheerleader office, and I'd sent over to some friends in America for some books, some videos of American football. And I was in the office, and I was reading this, you know, manual about American football, kind of an idiot's guide to American football I'd got from America. And Derek came in and he went, what are you doing? And I went, I'm just reading this book. And he went, you can't have that. And he actually literally confiscated this book. He said, you will learn at the same pace as the viewer. And so that was how it started. It was because I didn't know anything about American football that I was hired. But it was because he liked what I did on air, where I could explain, I don't know, a concept to the listener. And he liked the way that I kind of delivered the program. And he obviously liked the way that, you know, I was enthusiastic about American football. And I could actually say on the first program, look, this is the most fantastic game in the world. You know, come with me and we'll learn together. And, you know, by God's good grace, you know, that's what happened.
So wasn't it a little bit of a baptism of fire, the first episode? Because if memory serves me right, yeah, there was a player strike. Yes. So there were no games to show.
No. I mean, that was, I think it was about 2 weeks before we went on air that the players went on strike, you know, which was an extremely big deal because, you know, in those days, we had a production company in New York, a production office in New York. The games would be recorded in New York, and then a producer would fly. The producer who did the studio would then get on a plane, fly to New York, do the edit, and then fly back with the tapes. It wasn't sort of, you know, it wasn't high tech or anything like that. You know, they'd physically come back with the tapes and they'd edit the tapes in New York. And there were two producers who would sort of crisscross. But to go back to your point, yes, there was a player strike. And we went on the air and I said, you know, this is a great game. It's the most amazing game in the world. But the players are on strike. And I think in a sense, that really helped us. Because the idea of the program was that this was sport as entertainment, that we weren't going to do it in the same way as the BBC. I mean, for the fact that they hired me, you know, showed that they weren't going like the BBC had done. And I think that it allowed us to sort of introduce characters and stars, because it's, you know, to make this thing kind of rock and roll, you've actually got to have rock and roll personalities. And it's very difficult to have a rock and roll personality when, you know, they've got, you know, a face mask on and you can't see them and they've got a helmet. And so I think it allowed us to sort of make stars of people like Riggins and Theismann. And in fact, the Washington Redskins, you know, were the team who really kind of took us to their hearts and allowed us in. They were the first team that actually allowed a British crew to interview them. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't the most auspicious of starts in terms of the strike, but I do think that it really helped us kind of establish the programme. And, you know, we did the Idiot's Guide, you know, this is how it works, you know, and it was very kind of gentle.
So at what stage did you realise that it was becoming, as we look back now, a phenomenal success? Because it was huge.
There were two things actually that really made me stop in my tracks, and they were both around the same, actually the same weekend. We'd been on the air for about, so the games had resumed. We'd been on the air for about 5-6 weeks, I think, 6 weeks. And I went to the West End, and I was walking down Carnaby Street, funnily enough, and I saw people wearing NFL clothing. So I saw a Washington Redskins jacket, and I saw two LA Raiders jackets. That was on the Saturday. And I always remember something that Malcolm McLaren, the manager of the Sex Pistols, said to me. That, you know, the whole thing about punk wasn't just about the music. It actually started with the fashion, with punk fashion. I mean, the Sex Pistols came out of, you know, Malcolm McLaren's shop, Sex, in King's Road, which was, you know, about fashion. And then that Sunday, I was walking in Hyde Park, and I saw people playing American football in Hyde Park. They had, you know, a proper NFL ball, and they were playing, you know, touch football. There were two teams, and I thought those two things. I just thought, blimey, you know, we've kind of hit the zeitgeist here. And also looking at the audience figures, you know, those initial shows, in fact, those first three seasons, we were never out of the Channel 4 top 10. Never out of the Channel 4 top 10. You know, that was the fact that we were on it in the God slot, you know, really helped us as well. That was a programming stroke of genius to put us on at, you know, 6:30 on a Sunday night, when, you know, Songs of Praise on the other channels, and there we are with, you know, this amazing spectacle, and, you know, the music that we played, you know, because I had a very strong hand in, you know, choosing the music and the theme music and the results of the music. So that's when I kind of realized that, you know, this was something bigger than a TV program for me. It was part of a movement, if you like.
You were very much in danger of stealing my next question then when you got on the news.
Oh, sorry.
Now, my memory again is it starting out, you were using a Holding Out for a Hero music.
Yeah.
By Bonnie Tyler, which
Bonnie
I think
Tyler, yeah.
you can put me right on this, but I think it was a B-side to the more well-known hit, Total Eclipse of the Heart. Yes. Or it was a double A-side.
I think it was a double A-side, actually, yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah. So, you know, my question on the music was, because you had that, and then you had the Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
My question with the Eurythmics as well, we used as well.
Yeah, yeah. And we've had a question from someone else about another song, which I'll come back to anyway. But my question was going to be, how much influence did you have on the music? And you obviously said that a lot of it was down to you.
Yeah, certainly the result sequence music, or the initial title sequence with Brian Eno and David Byrne. Remember that? It was the sort of clumpy clump, the initial title sequence, the one with Riggins, you know, the diesel. That was David Byrne, and Talking Heads, and Brian Eno, from an album called My Life in the Bush of Ghosts, which was, you know, a really obscure album. But you know, they used that for the title sequence. And then I came up with all these other things. You know, the music sequence at the end of every game. You know, I would come up with two or three ideas, and then Derek and whoever the producer was, Mike Wilmot, should get an honourable mention. You know, Mike and I and Derek would choose which one. And it depended on the story. You know, when Theismann, you know, had that awful, awful accident where, you know, he broke his leg, you know, in two places, three places, I think. And you saw it, and we kind of agonized whether we would show the video. You know, I wanted something very poignant. And so we used Say It Ain't So, Joe, which was, you know, it brought tears to one's eyes. Because it wasn't just the sort of driving music, this kind of spectacular holding out for a hero stuff. It was also the sort of the very poignant stuff. And I think the music that we chose, I think there was some, I mean, and they put the pictures to it. I just came up with the music. But I think it was, we were a great team. Cheerleader was a great team of young, really creative people who just loved this game and loved the craft of television. Sorry,
that's all right. It's all right. I'll only interrupt when I think I've had enough. I'll quite have to listen to you. But the question that I've been racking my brains about all week, and probably for a bit longer than that, is when you did a results sequence during the early shows, you used a piece of classical music. Don't know if you remember. And it's, I can't find it anywhere. Not being an expert on classical music, classical. I'm not going to sing it because it's yeah.
I think you should, Charles.
No.
Every time he tries to sing anything to me, it sounds the same, no matter what it is.
You've no idea what it is. I don't remember.
No, I've been trying to find it. I've been trying to find it, but my limited knowledge.
Give me a clue.
I can only sing it.
Was it orchestral? March of the Valkyries.
See, my singing's brilliant.
I even recognise that one.
I mean, I'm not a huge expert on classical music, although I was at Classic FM for years. My wife actually is a trained viola player. She's the expert, but she's on the phone downstairs. Yes, I think it's Ride of the Valkyries.
Right, which is great, because that just fitted in brilliantly with the programme.
Yeah.
I'm just thankful that someone's told me what it is, because I've been trying to find it desperately. I've never listened to so much classical music this week. how much effect has the game had on you? I'm getting to the fact that, you know, when you finished doing the show, do you still follow it? Have you still followed it? How long did you follow it for?
I'm Yeah, I haven't followed it as much in the last couple of years, I have to admit. But I certainly followed it a lot immediately after, and for several years after. I mean, I actually did some work, not last year, but the year before, for the NFL here in the UK, where I would talk to students about those early years of American football, students that were, you know, playing American football here in the UK. And I never got involved in the British game as such. But yeah, I certainly followed it for a good few years. And they asked me when Frank Gifford took over, and they moved the entire production to New York. I was very in favor of that. Because they said that they wanted to move the whole thing to New York and have the whole program produced in New York and then satellite it across. So the producer would essentially live in New York for 7 months of the year. And they wanted Frank Gifford. I couldn't go and live in New York because I was working on Capital and I was, you know, working on Virgin and, you know, I had my voiceovers and all that stuff. So I couldn't just, and, you know, I had a family. So I couldn't just sort of, you know, pack up and go to New York for that amount of time. So I was very in favor of Gifford because I thought Gifford had the kind of energy and the dynamism and the rhythm, really, of a radio presenter. And obviously an incredible knowledge of the game. And I was very, you know, pro that decision. And then when the Vicious Boys took over, I was asked to go back to do the playoffs. And I had a very pleasant lunch with the producers. And they said, look, you know, we'd like you to come back and do the playoffs this season. And I thought about it and I thought, you know, to use Don Henley's brilliant expression in The Boys of Summer, you know, don't look back, you can never look back. And I didn't want to come back and just do the playoffs. You know, I felt that was, you know, I'd done my bit. I'd started something off. For the second time in my career, you know, I was there at the very beginning of commercial radio. And we had a blank canvas on which to paint. And I'm very proud of that part of my work. And exactly the same with Channel 4. You know, we were bringing something entirely new to TV. And so I felt that I'd sort of been there and I'd done that. And then I kept in contact with friends and the producers and stuff. And I kept, you know, looking at the scores and seeing how the Redskins and the 49ers were doing, because they were my two top teams. But no, in the last couple of years, I haven't followed it as closely. I think the game is very different now to what it was. I think everybody acknowledges that. So, yeah, it's, you know, that was a great time in my life. Great time.
So you mentioned handing over to Frank Gifford, but then the reins passed to the Vicious Boys, who you've mentioned.
Yes.
Did you have any particular view on how that went? Because I kind of drifted away from it for a while when they were presenting. Because anyway, go on.
I think that I need to be quite diplomatic here. Mm. I think there was a move within Channel 4 as an entity to have people presenting who were not presenters. So this wasn't just to do with American football. This was to do with Channel 4 and the way that it saw itself in terms of the kind of people that it wanted presenting. And I think the Vicious Boys were hopelessly out of their depth. You know, they weren't presenters. They never set themselves up to be presenters. But I think the way that you talk to your viewer, or indeed your listener, and I was always taught from the very beginning of my career that, you know, in radio, there's only ever one person listening. You're only ever talking to one person. And when you kind of take the mickey out of, you know, the game, when people are taking it seriously and passionately, you don't take the piss. And put it to, you know, too fine a point on it. And I think that the Vicious Boys thought it was, or the producers thought that that's what they wanted the Vicious Boys to do. And I think it was an awful time for the game. And I think it was an awful time for the way it was televised. But it was, and it's very important for me to emphasize this, it was part of a much broader culture within television at that time. You know, let's get people who aren't presenters, who are nothing like presenters. You know, let's get people with speech impediments. Let's give them a show. And it was the time.
That's interesting to hear that. My again, I'm going back on my memories here, so they might be a bit fuzzy, was that their tenure really seemed to fall apart when they actually had to do the live casting at the Super Bowl. And I seem to remember it was a bit of a disaster. And I'm not sure how far they went beyond.
I didn't see that. I mean, I have to say that having done some live Super Bowls, that it is the most difficult technically thing to do, to be in a booth above a stadium where you have to cover the ads, because the Americans obviously take more ads than we do, and you've got a schedule, and you can see that, you know, you've got like 3 minutes for your next commercial break, and then suddenly, because there's a turnover, or because there's you know, a touchdown, or something happens, or a timeout, that, you know, they take more commercials, and that you might as well throw that schedule out the window. So from a technical point of view, you know, if I'm talking to Don Shula and I think I've got 3 minutes to talk to him, and then suddenly I hear, and we're going back in 10 seconds, you know, having to wrap up someone like Shula, or whoever was, you know, my guest, from a technical point of view, it is the most difficult thing in the world to do. So I don't blame them at all for that. You know, even the great broadcasters, the greatest broadcasters, struggle with something like that.
So you did it for a few years and then handed the reins over to Frank Gifford. How difficult was that to do, to walk away from it? And how long did it take you to, till you weren't really missing it?
As I said, it wasn't difficult. It wasn't a difficult decision. As I said, I was, you know, very pro the idea of Gifford doing it when I couldn't go and live in New York for 7 months.
So nowadays, how can you walk down the street without anyone coming up and saying, I remember you on Channel 4 in the American Football Show?
Oh, I can walk down the street and people, you know, people more often than not sort of just completely ignore me. But to this day, actually, I do still occasionally get stopped. You know, someone will come up to me, or on Boom Radio, you know, an email will come in. In fact, an email came in just before I came on air with you, they were listening to me on Boom, and they talked about, you know, how they got into American football at the start of Channel 4, and, you know, thank you so much for, you know, what you did to introduce me to the NFL. And that was an email literally came in 5 minutes before, you know, I joined you for this Snapchat.
You know what? I've listened to Boom Radio a couple of times just to see if you sounded the same as you did back in the 80s. And I really feel like I've missed a trick now. I could have been emailing or texting into the show to say, you know, you're talking on my thing. And everyone would have heard on Boom Radio about the first down show. Richard will be sacking me.
Well, you did miss it. You did miss a trick.
You missed that one, Charles. You've got to admit, Mickey, Charles has been excited about this for weeks.
I'm so pleased.
We did a draft show the other week and a few others, but in back of Charles has been talking about, can't wait till Nicky comes on, I've got so much. It was like, this is my show. Because he remembers everything about it.
Well, I'm hoping that I'm right about Ride of the Valkyries, actually.
Yeah. I think you will be.
I think
well,
it
I
is.
I hope so. I'm trying to find Spotify at the moment. Let me just see whether this is right.
Just while you're looking this up, I'm going to put something up on camera and see if you remember that.
Okay. Hang on a second. I see your book. And there's that. But have you seen that? Actually, I haven't got the cover for this. Oh, there you go.
Blimey.
The complete American.
Complete what? I've just got the viewer's guide.
The style of that hardback.
This is the hardback.
Yeah. There used to be a Channel 4 annual as well.
That was something different. But the complete American football book, funnily enough, these books, right, came out in, when was it? No, I've got the published date. When did they come out? Hang on, let's have a look. There's no date. Oh, here we are. 86, right? So these books, which I wrote, by the way, they weren't ghosted. I actually wrote them.
I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, no, I actually wrote them. I had an editor come and actually live in my house for 2 months, and we wrote it together. What was I going to say? Oh, yes, I know what I was going to say. So they came out in 86, and about 3 weeks ago, I got a statement from the authors. It's like the collection service for music, but for authors. So, you know, when something is photocopied, you get a small payment. And I got almost £100 for photocopying for those two books that came out in 1986. Because people are still photocopying them. And they are, you know, so ridiculously out of date. So that was quite good. Now, this is... Oh no, that's the wrong one. Ride of the Valkyries. Oh. Is that it?
No, because that's one I came across. Unless it changes.
No,
later
it's
on.
Not. No.
We'll have to put it up on our on the site and see if anyone can identify it. I did know what it was, and
it's not Ride of the Valkyries.
Charles, we'll film you, Charles, singing it and put it in the group.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. So what happens to this now? Are you videoing this, and does this go out as a video cast, or how does it
goes
it
out as a so we what we do it as a podcast, so it's on spot we're on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon.
Yeah.
And then we do the video bit and we just save it as an alternative. Just if people want to watch the video as well, we put the video on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
But it's just a different option. But
and you're there, right?
Yeah, we edit it. Yeah, we take out the bits where we talk before we start the show and after.
Right. Okay.
I've got a
Anything else?
Yeah, just because we put it out to some of the people who read out the three people who read look at our website or whatever you want to call it, the Facebook page. They wanted a few things asked. Now you've answered a lot of the stuff. For instance, someone was asking who you support, and I think you said Washington and San Francisco.
San Francisco, yeah. Yeah. I mean, for two reasons. Washington, because, as I said, they were actually the first team that allowed us, after the strike had ended, they were the first team that allowed us into the dressing room and gave us interviews. So, because, you know, none of them really took us that seriously. You know, this short British disc jockey doing NFL. And we had a very attractive female camera person called Kimberly, who was our American crew. And Kimberly was a really good-looking woman. And she went into the locker room, you know, with her camera, and there were these, you know, half-naked men there. And that was one reason why they allowed us in. to be perfectly honest, because it was very rare to have a woman in the dressing room, and very rare to have a woman as a camera person in those days. So yeah, they and then the 49ers, because Joe Montana was so incredibly hospitable to us. We went to his home. He made us lunch. You know, he was lovely. When the Super Bowl was in San Francisco. So, I follow teams because of kind of emotions, like most of us do, really. Hang on a second. Yeah.
Ordered anything?
Yeah, I have. I'm just.
I know. Is it being delivered?
It is being delivered.
Okay.
And it will be here any minute.
You, yeah.
Any minute.
Just
yeah.
Hear, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, Jenny,
yes?
Come in. You might be able to help here.
Doubt it.
No, I think you might.
In a bad
actually.
Mood.
Hi. I can't actually put you on. I'm going to give my wife the headphones.
That sounds a bit scary. What can I help with? American football?
No. It's to do with identifying a classical piece of music.
Hello.
Charles has got to say.
Hi.
This means it's a classical piece of music that went out on Channel 4 on the American football show right at the beginning. And I've had to, they've forced me embarrassingly to sing it, which I'm going to now have to do again.
Yes, you are.
Desperately don't want to do, but I'm so desperate to know what it is. So here we go.
Okay.
It goes.
It is. I think it's Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I don't know. We'll have to look that up afterwards.
It is.
Prokofiev's
Romeo and Juliet.
We thought. Oh, I was thinking when you. When you knocked on the door,
yeah,
that was Nikki's.
Thank you. Yes, hello.
To get the hell out of this podcast.
If you've not heard in 30 minutes, come and get me.
It's great because he can't hear me saying this now.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Well, you've got the music now.
Right.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Thank you
very much.
Okay.
Delayed by 10 minutes.
Oh, good.
Right.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet.
Right, Prokofiev, Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, but very well sung.
Thank you. I was just saying that we thought you'd called her in after a certain time if to pull you out of this podcast. Just
Actually, now I think about it, that would have been a great idea. But no, there was. I knew that I had this takeaway, but you know, they just called me and they said they're 10 minutes late.
Oh,
yeah.
All right. That's a complete opposite to what we expected.
Yes.
We thought maybe 10 minutes early.
See, and you got Prokofiev out of it.
Yeah, so, brilliant. There you go. Brilliant.
And we got Charles to sing again.
Yeah.
That's the problem with these recordings. It's there forever. Would it be when you, earlier on? This is just another question from someone on the Facebook page. They were saying, and you alluded to this earlier on about how much the game's changed since the '80s. Is there anything? Is there any big change that you could actually think of off the top of your head now, which separates the '80s from anything sort of more recent?
I think I'll take a pass on that. Actually,
yeah,
because I do have quite strong views about the politics of things. So I think it's best if I take a pass on that.
Okay, well, I'll not labour that one anymore. any player from the '80s, bear in mind how different the game's become. Any player from the '80s that you think could still cut it in the modern era?
No, actually, no. I mean, I think that, you know, I mean, that goes back to, you know, how the game has changed. I think that the physical attributes that one needs are different. The pace of the game has changed. And so I think, no, I think if anyone from, you know, the '80s, you know, came back again. I mean, someone like, you know, Jerry Rice, you know, would the game that he played, would that work these days? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think there are different skill sets needed now.
So we're not likely to see anyone like the fridge again.
Certainly not like William. No, William was one on his own. He really was. We actually had a great deal of fun. We did an advert, a commercial for Tesco, and it was all about, you know, open your fridge, and it was, you know. That was the idea of it, and we filmed it in Candlestick Park, and God, did we have fun. We shot over 2 days, and I think he only had like 2 or 3 lines, and he kept screwing up. he bless him, he just kept screwing up. It was but he was a very, very funny man. So yeah, I don't think we'll see them, you know, his like again. But you know, we're not going to see the like of you know, Montana again. Not the way that he plays. Not with the, you know, you think about the grace of the man. I haven't seen any players. This is not to diss any of the players, because as I say, it's a different game. But I haven't seen anyone play with that sort of beauty.
Well, something that just springs to mind, actually, talking about not seeing some of the stuff from back in the '80s. I mean, one of the things was, I'm sure it was John Riggins, used to be regularly be on the Oxygen when he was on the sideline. You don't see that now.
No.
Not on exercise bikes.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, yeah. No, you don't see that. Yeah.
Okay, do you have a favourite Super Bowl?
I think the one that I did with Shula, I mentioned Don Shula before, and that was in Miami, but I can't remember who was playing there.
Was that Washington? One of the early ones?
It was one of the early ones, yeah, but it was held in Miami. It may have been Washington.
I think it might have been Washington.
I just remember sitting next to him, and, you know, when we weren't on air, that he would see things on the field and point them out to me that, you know, I just couldn't see. I mean, he was seeing the minutiae of the game, and he was seeing it with such kind of clarity. It was astonishing to sit next to a man like that, and he was so nice and so, you know, gracious. It was fantastic. It was really, really good.
And there's a lot of talk these days about whether the UK is ever going to get a franchise, be it at Wembley or be it whatever. Is that something that ever cropped up back in the day? That, you know, because obviously it was a phenomenal success and people must have talked about it in the 80s. Or what if you came over here?
Well, yes. Yes and no. I mean, they talked about, you know, exhibition games, and we did have some exhibition games. They did talk about, you know, regular season games. And it didn't really go beyond that. But it was a few years later that, you know, the idea of a European or London franchise emerged. And, you know, I think I can say with as much certainty about anything, I mean, certainty these days is, you know, a currency that's very in short supply. However, I think that the idea of having a London franchise is just pie in the sky. It's not going to happen. Mm. Not going to happen. You know, it's not going to happen for, you know, all sorts of reasons. But you know, you think about, you know, the travel time. You think about COVID, you know, getting on, you know, aeroplanes and all the stuff that we're going to have to do now. I mean, I think before COVID, it was never going to happen. I think COVID has completely knocked that on the head. You know, a team from Los Angeles flying to London to play a game, then, you know, maybe flying back the next day or the day after, then they've got a bye week. You know, I mean, you know, that's just going to mess with the time zone thing is going to mess with everything. Bad enough when an LA team have to go to the East Coast, you know, East Coast to West Coast. You know, that's not easy. I think the whole idea of a London franchise is just rubbish.
There was one particular game in Twickenham that Ian and I had gone to, and he might be able to help me more with this. When it was apparent,
it was the Rams and the Giants. I can't remember which way round it was. I think it was the Rams had been there earlier. They'd come over to London earlier, and the Giants just didn't turn up for the first half of the game. I think they just couldn't move the ball at all, and they were actually on a program later in the season. I think on All or Nothing, and the Rams talked about it, how they prepared and the Giants hadn't, and it was such a strange game. I think you were there as well, Richard, weren't you?
But just because they haven't taken account of the time differences.
Yeah, but also the, you know, the culture and the fact that Wembley Stadium is not set up, or was not set up, you know, as for American football teams. It had to be modified. You know, the Tottenham ground, the new Tottenham ground, at least has been planned, you know, to have the right facilities for NFL teams, which are very different from the facilities that you need for a Premiership team. So at least that's happening. But I think Daniel Levy has actually, you know, made a bad bet there, because I think there'll still be regular season games. I think. I mean, who knows now with COVID? You know, will there be regular season games? Will teams want to take that risk now of getting in an aluminium tube? I'm very doubtful of that. Anyway, I can see on my CCTV, because I've got.
I think we need to let you guys enjoy your food.
I see my Indian is arriving. So I'm going to call it a night. But thank you so much for having me on.
No, really great. Thank you.
And please send me a link, can you?
I'll tweet it, Nicky, were you in it?
Yeah.
But thank you for joining us. And obviously, potentially, the NFL might not be in its state it is in the UK if it hadn't been for you in your Channel 4 show.
Definitely. Oh,
thank you. And it wasn't just me. It was the whole cheerleader.
I just apologise in advance if you get spammed on your radio show tomorrow. I'm not taking any responsibility. No.
Charles is retired now, so he's got plenty of time to be dropping emails. But thank all you right, again,
lovely,
Nicky.
Lovely to see you all. Thank you so much.
Thanks for giving us the time, Nicky.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye. Right, I'll shut up now.
There you go.
Right.
I'm adrenaline.
I doff my cap to you, sir. That was a very good interview. You did well.
It was, yeah.
It was, Charles.
And we'll start getting hate mail now.
That Super Bowl was 49ers and Bengals.
Right, yeah.
What we've worked out here is, despite your idiocy, actually, when we need to do a serious interview, you are the man
Charles
for the job.
Charles steps up to it.
No, but I'll only know I'm a serious interviewer when I start getting hate mail, because I'm bound to upset someone tonight, even if it's just Nicky's wife.
I'm quite happy to send you hate mail if that's what will make you happy.
So,
if you check your phone, I've just done it.
All right, thank you.
So, Charles, you can now you can relax now, and we'll do the news. If you want to have a break and have a drink.
I'm exhausted.
So,
obviously, I'm exhausted every week.
Well, this is true too.
But can I just say something? Because I just wanted to rouse, just before I do shut up, I am trying to shut up. I just wanted to say something that might have roused Stuart from his slumber. When Ian and I go over to America and we talk to people about American football, they're always astounded that we know absolutely anything about the game. They're like, you know, properly astounded. Americans.
I wouldn't even just say when you go to interview, and you don't just mean interview people, when you talk
no,
to,
I don't mean, just yeah, talk to people.
It's, I had it in New York where I was in a bar and I was watching some college games and I was just having a couple of pints. And in fact, it was in Trump Plaza. It was in the bar there. And I was just sat on my own and something happened. I can't remember what it was. And like sometimes you'll mutter something about somebody doing something stupid. And this guy looked at me and he says, "Aren't you English?" I says, "Yeah. How do you know about that?" And just got talking. We ended up with about six people all around the bar talking to me all afternoon just because they were amazed because an Englishman knew something about football.
It's like,
which is great for me because I know something about football. I've done a lot, but if the Americans still love it.
No, but it's yeah. like, I know.
Anyway, I know. Richard's got something important.
Well, I was just going to say.
Well.
I was going to say that, I remember Stuart, one of the first things Stuart told me when I first got to meet Stuart and everything. When he went on a work trip out to Texas, you were watching college football, weren't you, still in bars out there with guys?
Oh, yeah.
That was your introduction.
It was in Mexico, but the guy I was with was from Houston. And I didn't really know a great deal about anything. And he was a massive Longhorns fan. And he basically just sat with me and we watched, in the entire weekend, we just, watched all the college games Saturday. And then Sunday, and he basically just paid for all the beer and all the wings. It was brilliant.
Oh, so like him already.
Yeah, hence why I'm a Texans Longhorns fan now.
Yeah. So, sounds a bit like Charles, doesn't it, Ian, with water in LA?
Yeah.
About
$8 pints in the Coliseum.
Yeah.
So,
NFL news and rumours.
Bit of a news story this week, so Julian Edelman retired this week after a failed physical, medical, what you want to call it. It looks like he's pretty much retired. Gronk's come out overnight and goes, he might be playing again next year, but I think that's just a Gronk being the Gronk. I think Julian is done.
Have you seen his little mic drop that he does with his seat in the middle of Foxborough?
Oh, where he's sat in pitch, yeah.
So when he sits in on that director's chair in the middle of pitch. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it. And just walks off.
And to be fair, it's quite good and it's quite poignant. And he obviously does his whole speech about retiring, but then he just halfway through the sentence, he just gets up and walks off. And then camera, he just left looking at a chair, an empty chair. It's really weird.
And it just cuts to Foxborough forever, doesn't it?
Yeah, it cuts to Foxborough forever. I was like, wow. I was like, that looks like a proper production that they've been doing for years.
Now, I'm a Pats fan. He'll go down as one of the best in New England. Now, there's a lot of debate going on at the moment, and everyone's like, "Oh, I should go into Hall of Fame and all this stuff." But there's a lot of players out there who haven't got in yet who will be way ahead of him in the list. And I think also it's been miscued as that report, where the original report was Julian Edelman will go into the Patriots Hall of Fame, but it's sort of been twisted into saying he's going to go into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he's not. To me, he's not that elite. He's not Hall of Fame. He's had some great playoff performances and Super Bowl performances. He's, in fact, better after the regular season's ended. But you look at his regular season stats and they're pretty average, aren't they? So he's not. For Hall of Fame, he's got to be something special. And he's a very, very good player. And I like Julian Edelman a lot. But I can't see him being in the Hall of Fame. Stuart's very quiet on this. Normally, he's straight
on this. Because I can't decide. That's because I genuinely can't decide, and I can see the argument from both sides.
Mm.
And you know, I can understand why people might think he is Hall of Fame because of his productivity in the off season.
Yeah,
in the
post-season. big game player, isn't he? He is.
He's a big game player, and he's come up with some big catches, and he's got MVP. And obviously, has he played in a Pro Bowl? He hasn't been to a Pro Bowl.
No, never been to a Pro Bowl.
So I think that's going to work against him. But I'd probably err on the side of the fact that he hasn't been to Pro Bowls would suggest to me that he's probably not going to get into the Hall of Fame.
The big games, when you say that he plays one of the big games, the big games are the ones that people remember.
Yeah.
You know, so does that boost his chances?
See, that, I don't know, I don't think it works like that.
Does that also taint people's opinion?
Yeah.
I think it's more likely that taints people's opinion because they only ever see him in the big games and he always looks amazing. But actually, for the 16 games before that, he was, you know, like Ian says, you know, just a good player.
Yeah. I'm not saying he's an average player. He is good.
Oh, he's just a good player.
Don't think enough for the Hall of Fame.
He's a poor man's Adam Thielen, that's what he is.
Oh.
Shall I trigger our Facebook group and say he's a poor man's Des Bryant?
Oh.
Dallas. joking apart, that's a good point because you should be able to debate these things. And one of the people who replied to Ian almost tried to shoot him down in flames and saying that he's not up for debate, but surely.
I wasn't actually debating it. I just posted something, so I wasn't.
I know.
Everything is debatable.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely debatable.
Because if you shut it down and you can't talk about it, where do you go?
Yeah.
So,
well, life as we know it is over.
another story in news this week. Trevor Lawrence has already got the Jags playbook. It's no real big surprise, is it?
Yeah.
Really? Is he going number one? Oh. I said to, I can't remember, it might have been Ian or Charles, that I've listened to a few mock drafts over this week, and the only thing that I know for certain after ours is that we've got number one right. The rest of it, I have no idea anymore. Yeah. I have no idea anymore.
But isn't that the way, though? You debate it, and then it all just goes to pieces.
Yeah, I mean, but everybody has a different opinion. I've been talking to some Vikings fans this week, and even we can't decide on what we think we should take at 14. So how am I supposed to guess what another team's going to take? Because I can't even decide what we're going to take. It's all going to be how it falls on the day. There's going to be somebody, and I suspect it's probably going to be the Raiders that are going to pick somebody that you're like, who's he?
Overall, projected round 7, Raiders tip, pick 1.
Yeah.
To me, isn't the whole point of the mock draft to be a bit of fun? Because I get the impression from what I found about it recently is that people take it far too seriously.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's got to be about fun. It's got to be about fun and making sure that you're wrong. That's all I care about.
But I'm very serious. The one bit I'm very serious about is Kyle Pitts. And I think his stock's on the rise.
His stock's on the rise, though, he's not falling to 10 for Dallas.
He's not falling to 10. Have you not heard my theory? That I'm not saying it's a good thing, but this is what I'm saying to Stuart. What I can see is Jerry Jones is infatuated apparently with carpets, and you know what happens with Jerry sometimes. We Dallas end up doing something that's perhaps not in the team's best interests, but that's what Jerry wants. And it hasn't happened so much in recent years, but it's still there. And I can see a situation where we look at where we look at some of the free agents. You've got Sherman, a free agent, KJ Wright. I can see them both coming to Dallas in free agency. We trade up to get Kyle Pitts. And by getting Sherman, you're getting rid of that secondary need.
Whereas, yeah, I mean,
I'd prefer to take Surtain at 10. Stay at 10 and 10 and take Surtain.
I was reading something that the Falcons GM said, and he basically said that if they remained at 4, because they're still open for trades, that they would be foolish not to take a quarterback or their you know, future quarterback, because I don't think they plan on being that high up again.
No.
Which is what I said, but then again, literally 2 days later, somebody else said, if the Falcons are going to be all in on Matt Ryan for the next 2 years, they need to give him some weapons. So I'm a bit like, everything I read contradicts someone else. So I don't know anymore. So Charles could be right. My gut feeling is they take a quarterback, but they take a quarterback or they trade out of it. But I wouldn't be surprised if they take Kyle Pitts.
I mean, it's no surprise that the mock drafts get overexposure, because realistically, apart from, you know, you've got the draft coming up and you've got a bit free, the latter stages of the free agency happening now, but what else is there? You know, they've got to fill the content with something, and mock drafts seems to stir people's emotions.
Yeah. I think this year, number one, everybody's going to get right. Pick number two,
probably about 80%, maybe. I'd still think 50-50 on two.
No, I think 50-50 on two. It's either Fields or Wilson.
And it's a free-for-all.
Then number three with the Niners is again 50-50, because it's going to be either whoever didn't get picked second and Matt Jones. And then after that, from four downwards, I have no idea.
Apart from obviously Kyle Pitts at four.
No, I stick with the no idea. I literally don't know anymore. I don't know.
I've just blurted that one out.
But yeah, it's going to be very unpredictable. Well, obviously, we've been on for a bit tonight with that, obviously, Nicky, so we'll wrap up tonight's show. But
oh, hang on, you're wrapping up. I ain't finished.
You said you finished.
Wrap up quickly. I mentioned last week, I think it was, that there was talk about a second Monday night game, which might favour the Brits because the chances are to be on earlier.
Yeah.
Well, there's no point in labouring the point anymore, because apparently we're not having a second Monday night game anymore. They've gone against that.
Have they? I didn't see.
Yeah. And the final thing is, are the Browns going to be a top team next season? Because I just noticed they've now got Clowney, haven't they?
Clowney, yeah.
How's he got that deal?
It's not guaranteed. It's not $10 million guaranteed. It's that he can make $10 million if.
Yeah, but what's his base salary that worries me? Because the $10 million, I'm hoping it's minimal, with a chance if he gets sacks and stuff like that, he gets up to $10 million. And I know he performed quite well in the run game, but you're basically you're getting him to be a pass rusher, aren't you? Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Well, the quote I read was that the reason he'd gone there was because he wanted to go to a winning team. So what does that mean, the Titans?
Well, they were a winning team, weren't they?
Yeah.
So if he's going to a winning team, he maybe knows something everyone else doesn't.
I also don't think he had many options as well, though.
The Browns were a winning team last year.
He didn't play a lot last season, did he?
No, he did. He just wasn't very good.
He just wasn't very productive. Yeah.
You got to bear in mind, though, that Titans team, he was good in the run game, so I'll give him his credit. He was good in the run game for the Titans. But because the Titans didn't have anything else on passing pressure, he effectively became the only option that they had. Therefore, it got a lot of attention. So it's when a team's only got one pass rush option, it's very easy. Like, did you see, there was a footage in the, I can't remember who released it, but there's footage of Washington's games last year, and poor Chase Young was getting three teams. He was getting basically, there was three of them blocking him, because when a team has only got one pass rusher, you basically just go, right, well, you three just stop him and then we can do what we want.
We'll go the other way. or go over the top of him.
So that's why a good pass rush defence has got not just up the middle, but they've got both ends as well. And that's what made the Bucks so good, because they had JPP one side, they had Shaq Barrett the other side, they had Vita Vea down the middle, and they had Sue as well. And that's what made them good, because they had pressure from all points.
So we'll end tonight on...
Can I just say something?
I've got something else to say as well.
What I just want to say, you know, we've talked about, we're picking up a lot of listeners in various countries now, and they might not be aware that we also do have a group on Facebook. So if you're on Facebook, check out the First Down Facebook group as well.
How come you say you like what you're going to say? Does that mean nobody likes what I've got to say?
Yes.
It's very unlikely that we're going to like what you've got to say, but...
Pretty much, yeah.
Right,
so at least you keep
right.
it up this week.
So we're going to end the show on what will the Chicago Bears do next? DeWatty Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, Zion Dalton. They're now watching Justin Fields. This time next week, could they have entered that trade up market?
To be fair to Matt Nagy and the Bears. It's not a ridiculous scenario that Fields falls out of the top five. Maybe it could fall to number 10, for example. You know, if other people have other teams have other needs. And if he falls to 10, trading up to 10 is going to cost you a lot less than trading up to 4. So if you're a GM and you're a head coach, you do your due diligence in making sure that you've got the best scouting reports on everybody that might go in that top 10, because you don't want to get to the point where you could trade up for someone and you go, well, we haven't scouted them. We don't know what they're like. So for me, to kind of defend the Bears, which breaks my heart a little bit, I would expect that the Vikings have done the same. I don't expect Penny Sewell to drop to the to 14, but I hope to God that we've done our due diligence on him.
If he did.
If he did. Not if he dropped to 14, but if he dropped to like 8 and we could trade up to 8 to get him.
It's not going
to
cost as much to get 6 places up, is it?
And you don't know which players, because there's only so many top talents on the board. You know, somebody's going to drop somewhere. And you've got to make sure that exactly. You've got to make sure you've done your due diligence on all of the players.
Well, Jim McMahon has said recently that the Bears have lost the plot. He says they haven't had a decent quarterback for over 20 years and it's not about to change anytime soon. There you go. Done my homework.
But final word with Charles. He started the show and he's ending it. Well, thanks, guys, for another excellent show and great banter. See you next
week. Can we interrupt Richard this time? Interrupt him at the beginning?
Yeah, we should really do that. Yeah, go on. Do it again. Do it again, Richard. Say it again.
Not very nice.
Thanks. For people on the podcast that are obviously on the video, Richard just gave us the finger.
Well, thanks for tuning in this week, and thanks again to Nikki, who was our guest earlier. And
is this the thing where we'll interrupt at the end and start now? Will we go back to the start?
What are we doing next week?
We've got
all the listeners, then will they shut up and get off? About enough.
Everybody's switched off now. Nobody will be listening to this.
Oh yeah, nobody's listening to this.
Please let him finish. Let Richard say it. Go on, Richard. Go on.
The end.
Excellent. That should be the podcast name.
just the end.
What, the fact that we totally ignore that Nikki was on, it has to have something to do with Nikki. But yeah. Thanks, guys, and we'll see you next week.
Yes.
Podcast Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.